and spend time with. So thank you for having me. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So I first learned of Y Yeast. I was asked to come speak a little bit about PEAR, the nonprofit that I work with that works with homeless youth aged 15 to 24, because I understand that you've all been focused on social justice. So I thought when I was asked to come back and talk a little bit about my own background, that what I would do is tell you a little bit about my sort of how my family and my personal path sort of intertwine with my professional path to allow me to work in social justice. I grew up in Seattle in a family of political advisors, activists, professors, and public school teachers. My grandfather, Alex Edelstein, was a political advisor, academic, professor, and the head of the School of Communications at the University of Washington. He was one of the first academics to study and document the effects of propaganda. My mom was a public school teacher for 30 years and now designs technology-based curriculum that connects kids at risk of dropping out of high school with mentors, real-world professionals, in fields that interest them. Five of my aunts and uncles and my brother are public school teachers in Seattle. One of my aunts was an activist in the 60s in El Salvador that worked with victims of unlawful imprisonment and torture. And my brother-in-law works with special needs, Spanish-speaking children of immigrants. So, all of that is to say that growing up in my family meant three things for me. One, that there is no such thing as working or living without purpose. Two, that purpose need be the social good. And three, not only had I better work for the social good, but I had better make a real difference doing it. When I was little, I was bossy. Although my family has since learned that calling little girls bossy is not for the social good. The combination of my bossiness and my family's expectations for all of our work and participation in the world logically led everyone, including me, to believe that I should work as a politician. At the time, as funny as it seems to me now, politics seemed like the best way to create real change. I attended leadership camps for young women. I interned for one of the best political campaign strategists in Washington State, with the European Union in Brussels, and finally landed in an office at Seattle City Council. And that is where I learned politics wasn't going to be for me. At the council, I worked in constituent communications, and I was dissatisfied with the level of engagement of council members with their constituents, and disappointed that my 21-year-old self was the one actually reading everyone's letters and forming an opinion and responding. And my theory about politics being a great place to get things done was proved wrong when I came to understand the process and negotiation and concessions that comes with getting things done in politics. And I sort of realized that long term, I just didn't think that I had the patience for it. So, dissatisfied with my work there, I sought to understand what other options there were in the world to create positive change. Of course, there were excellent nonprofit organizations that I looked into, considered working with, but I wasn't really entirely sure that I was ready to choose one issue and really focus on that. And so, a family friend mentioned Pyramid Communications to me. Pyramid is a communications agency that works solely for causes, for the social good. We work almost exclusively with nonprofits, foundations, government agencies, and Native tribes. And we get stuff done. We create messaging and stories. We build campaigns to raise awareness of issues and increase participation in them. And we help nonprofits raise money, be more effective, anything else under the communications sun. I started at Pyramid as a marketing associate and junior project manager. And some of my first projects in my first year included working with the National Indian Child Welfare Association to develop messaging that would help the organization raise awareness with decision makers about the injustices and barriers that face Native children in our country's foster care system. With Technology Access Foundation in Seattle to help more young people of color see a future in science, technology, engineering, and math. With the Seattle Foundation to design a 24-hour giving campaign that to date, over the course 5 years later now, has raised over $30 million for over 1,200 nonprofit organizations in King County up north. And with United Way of the Columbia Willamette here in town to engage the next generation in the Portland metro area to support their work to break the cycle of childhood poverty. Whether our work takes place online, on social media, in print, in the political landscape, or in person, our job, more often than not, is to help our clients tell their stories, raise awareness, and engage people. So we always start by working to understand what people know, think they know, and care about now. And that is the most fascinating part of the process to me. What's fascinating about it is not so much learning what people know or think about issues, but rather why they think and know what they do. And where did they get their information? What influenced their opinion? What personal values that they hold are they connecting to this issue, and how is that influencing their opinion? What inspired them? What would inspire them to think or behave differently? It doesn't take long working in this environment and doing this kind of research to understand that most people's knowledge and opinions today on social issues aren't shaped by the news or a single elected leader as they once were, but rather by their peers and the communities that they find themselves interacting with on a day-to-day basis. And as such, it was early in my career that I was reminded of something that I'd heard my grandfather talk a lot about in the 90s on walks around Green Lake in Seattle with my mom. And I mentioned that my grandfather studied propaganda. He wrote a book in which he distinguished two types of propaganda, the old propaganda and the new propaganda. So according to him, old propaganda consisted of ideas generated by very few people and that were often then projected by large-scale media and consumed by the masses. So old propaganda had a tremendous effect and influence in shaping environments that made things possible, like contempt for the Jewish people and Adolf Hitler's rise to power in Europe, fear of Japanese Americans in internment camps in the United States, fear of communism in the Cold War, the exclusion of African-American people, our expectations of women, and so on. Old propaganda is what we know and remember as the control and manipulation of mass cultures in the early, mid, and 20th century. And old propaganda is something that my grandfather hoped was more or less behind us when he wrote his book. New propaganda is what he saw coming. New propaganda is the product of a participatory culture, a culture that emerged post-World War II. And in this participatory culture, members of the popular culture gained a new ability to initiate their own messages rather than just respond to messages. According to my grandpa, old propaganda inhibited the functioning of popular culture, and new propaganda, with the help of democracy, could enhance it. So sitting in my seat as a junior project manager at Pyramid, I thought, that's really why we're here and what we seem to be doing, helping organizations doing good work in the world introduce ideas and further the new propaganda. In coining the term new propaganda and defining it as he did, my grandpa was really ahead of his time. The book was published in 1997, before social media, before Twitter. But he, as many people did, could already see a future coming where one-way communication was going to be a thing of the past and many, rather than a few, would hold and shape the message. It sounds really odd to me still to use the term propaganda and say you're going to use it in a positive sense. But if new propaganda is the ability for more people to share more information and create dialogue rather than one-way messages from a few authorities, then I'd say it's a very positive tool at all of our disposal. So here's an example of where I see the idea of new propaganda as my grandfather described it in Pyramid's work. We recently worked with the Blackfeet Nation in Montana to rally the public in support of canceling an illegally granted gas lease in the Badger 2 Medicine, which was an area of particular cultural significance to the Blackfeet that the tribe had utilized for more than 10,000 years. The Blackfeet Nation had called for the cancellation of this illegally granted leases on their ancestral lands for 30 years, and nothing happened. And they approached Pyramid for help, and we suggested a different approach. We suggested building an alliance of tribes, native organizations, local businesses, faith leaders, cultural icons like Pearl Jam. And we equipped all of those audiences with the story and ask them to help us reach more people, engaging their respective networks. We created a change.org campaign that secured 7,000 signatures, and the groundswell of messages and participation from all corners of all kinds of different communities resulted in large-scale media attention. Over 50 media stories were printed, and ultimately enough pressure was produced for the Department of the Interior to cancel the gas lease, which they did. So I think the reason that that campaign was successful when the tribe's calls for action over the past 30 years hadn't been was because of what people are influenced today, the many and not the one. A shared message is a very powerful thing, and our ability to come together as a community to influence results is amazing. Although I was not there, we knew that in the 60s. During the civil rights movement, for example. And I think we all too often forget today. So I think old propaganda and new propaganda really have three things in common. First, they both require focused, really focused messages that are easy to understand, digest, easy to repeat. They require an ability to reach and engage your audience authentically enough for that audience to listen. And they both rely on the message being developed within the context of what the audience knows, thinks, and cares about. So here's another example of how the new propaganda theoretically would work. United Way of the Columbia Willamette, here in town, hired Pyramid and myself to help them raise awareness of their work to break the cycle of childhood poverty. We did our due diligence and, as always, started by working to understand why United Way was having trouble getting people in this area on board with a very worthwhile cause. And we found that there were a few barriers. First, there was confusion between our local United Way and their values, focus, and work in the world and the national organization they're tied to. Two, United Way had a new, energized leader with an excellent, smart, carefully developed plan, but he himself was not yet known and trusted, and the organization's past leadership and work hadn't gained much local traction or confidence. And third, and most importantly in our research, we found that the idea that you could break the cycle of childhood poverty was not believable to people. It sounded too big and too unattainable. And I can understand why. It's a complicated issue, and to truly break the cycle would require a coordinated, multifaceted approach. United Way had in fact done the hard work to understand the key levers that contribute to breaking the cycle of childhood poverty, and they did in fact develop a multifaceted, long-term approach that was grounded in extensive research and everything we know about the root causes of poverty in America. They had a plan to work with hundreds of people and organizations to make sure every child has access to early education, make sure every child lives in a stable home, make sure every parent has economic opportunity to provide for their children. But it didn't really matter if United Way had the secret sauce if no one was listening or willing to support it. so what we did was develop messaging, story, that recognized and honored what people knew and thought. We confronted the concerns head on. We agreed. Yes, it is a big, complicated issue, and yes, moving the dial will take a lot of work and resources from a lot of people. And yes, it is possible, and here's how. Because United Way's leadership wasn't necessarily the right messenger for our audience, the people that our audience weren't most likely to listen to, we sought help. And we knew from research that a large portion of the Portland metro area that had time or money to help cared about this issue. And we knew from our research that if presented with an argument and strategy that made sense, that they would help. So we just needed to reach them and with that story. So we sought to understand where the people we knew would care were getting their information. And we found that it was from the leadership of similarly focused nonprofit organizations that they already knew and trusted and already supported. And the good news was that United Way was already working with many of those organizations, and they were all partners in United Way's mission. So we started there. We solicited the help of United Way's partners, our local elected business and philanthropic leaders, and local cultural icons, and we supplied them with the story about United Way, and the story of what the United Way of the Columbia Willamette could accomplish. And if the people that we were speaking to and sharing the story with felt a connection to it, then we asked them to share. And they did. And over the course of a few months, and with the help of social media, we were able to move people to give over $100,000 and donate over 11,000 hours of volunteer time to help. 50% of those donations and of time or money came from people that had never engaged with United Way before. So it opened up a whole network for them that the next generation of supporters. So today, United Way is doing a work with higher visibility and support and continue to project that they should be able to cut childhood poverty in the Columbia Willamette in half by 2025. I work towards a similar challenge in my role as a board member at PEAR. I know that many of you know PEAR. For those of you that don't, PEAR is a nonprofit organization here in town that works with homeless youth aged 15 to 24. Our programming includes basic needs, education, art, recreation, and transition. We start by engaging kids through our basic needs program. PEAR operates as a day center that provides food, warmth and safety, and offers an environment unlike any other day center serving homeless youth in the city. PEAR is comfortable, homey, personable. There are no gated windows separating youth from those serving them. The kitchen is at the center of an open plan space, and our staff greet every kid that walks through our doors, mostly by name and always without assumption, judgment, and direct, warm eye contact. Over time, we get to know the kids that spend their days with us, and we engage them in our education, arts, and recreation programs. Joy, one of PEAR's founders, leads the kids in reading, discussing books. She teaches critical thinking, teamwork, and social skills through really unexpected means, like interactive games like Dungeons and Dragons. Will, our arts coordinator, takes the kids out to museums and studios, brings professional artists into PEAR to teach encaustic painting and drawing classes. And this January, our kids, you can see now when I wrote this talk. I was originally going to come and talk with you all on the day that it snowed. I don't know if everybody remembers that day. It was a lot of fun. So since January now, our kids have been working to build a handmade boat. And Susan Webb, another board member, described the reason for this exercise to me and its outcome so beautifully that I captured it and I thought I would share it with you. So as Susan says, this exercise of building the boat, it's not about the boat. The boat itself represents the use of time, of life for positive purpose. The act of creating the boat teaches what's made possible by substantiating time toward a purpose. And creating something as powerful as a boat that can transport oneself is powerful healing. Nate, our recreation coordinator, takes the kids out rock climbing, snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, boating, hiking. He even took a few kids on one of PEAR's first overnight camping trips last summer. And it's through these programs and the committed work of our team that pair youth learn the critical thinking, problem solving, and social skills they need to get ready to transition from life on the streets into our society. And that is when they move through our transition program. With community partners, we offer GED classes, barista school, bicycle repair training programs, and more. I occasionally teach a resume writing workshop, and we help our kids find jobs and stable housing. Even once our kids have moved on from care, many of them keep in touch, finding us during times of need, letting us know how they're doing, or even volunteering themselves. A lot of our volunteers now are former fair youth. And it's an amazing organization that is truly changing lives and improving the health of our whole community every single day. But back to their communications challenge. CARE faces many of the same communications challenges United Way faces. Solving homelessness feels really big, potentially unattainable, and often people are wary of investing in our work simply because they wonder whether we would actually really be able to make a difference and accomplish what we're saying we aim to. And so in our communications, we're often working to correct common misperceptions. For example, we often hear that folks don't feel a sense of personal responsibility in helping Portland's homeless youth because they're not our kids. People often think these young people come from all over the country to Portland because our social services are just so good that it's easy to skate by and be generally taken care of without contributing. We often hear people say that they believe that our homeless youth have homes out there with worried parents and that they're homeless because they've made irresponsible decisions or are acting out. And of course, in reality, more than half of the kids that we serve are from here, grew up in this area, and more than 60% of them are homeless because they're either victims of domestic violence or were not welcome in their homes because they're gay. That's over 60%. Once these kids become homeless, the barriers they face to rejoining our society are many. But we know how to reach them, we know how to engage them, and we know how to change the outcomes of their lives. So we need help to get it done. And when we're able to engage people in our society, in our story, they begin to feel like teenage homelessness is something they could possibly affect, which is true. But it takes work to share our story, share our message, and to be successful in doing so, we rely on other messengers and tools like our website, dialogue, conversation, connection making, social media, videos, in-person engagements, or ultimately, we rely on the new propaganda. Many, many more messages coming from many different people. And in what my grandfather calls the era of new propaganda, where anyone can own the message, and everyone can participate in dialogue rather than just respond to one-way messages, we can reach people, tell our story, have a conversation, and make connections between people and values and ideas. And once we do, we can begin to work together towards shared goals and solutions. So the way that we communicate and engage with one another is everything. In the world we live in, the messages we receive, the messages we consume, repeat, define our popular culture. They influence our opinions, our voting patterns, and how we choose to engage and navigate in the world we live in. And we can all participate. In fact, it really only works that way. So I believe that we all have a responsibility to engage with the messages that surround us every day. Question them, explore them, build on them, share your own. Become an active participant in defining the world we live in. If we can all show up in the age of the new propaganda, then maybe Winston Churchill will have been wrong when he said, a lie gets halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to get its pants on. Thank you.